Second recommendation for La Salle 7, we are asking for a larger commitment just because it's a larger fund and they invest in bigger property. For La Salle, they certainly don't buy as cheap as Long Wharf, but they will not chase expensive assets. For example, for this fund, they were looking at the retail building literally right by next Union Square, but eventually a foreign buyer came in, so they back away. What they buy are good assets that are mispriced. So that's sort of their profile. And I'll use the excess building. I remember Deborah, you and I and Will, we tore that excess building years ago. And that building was not cheap when they bought it. It was about 5%, 5.5 cap rate. But that building has 600 units, but it's located within a few blocks that has about 10,000 professionals whose priority in their life is to get enough sleep. We are talking about law school students, nurses, doctors, just very dense area. And to my understanding, they are in the final stretch of closing this asset. So this is their profile. For Fund 7, there's a meaningful but favorable change to LP, which is, again, taking Deborah, your feedback on their slow pace and charging on the fees based on the commitment amount. So for this fund, they are going to change that. So they will charge on the invested capital. So certainly they you know, took LP's feedback into heart. With that, I want to open up to questions before we have them come.
Yeah, let me just expand on that a little bit. One of my concerns with the last fund with this manager was you mentioned the fee, but the real issue is they didn't deploy the money. They didn't, you know, I mean, we were 2 and 3 and 4 years out and still sitting at 45% called at one point. Now, I see that in the memo that they called 86% of the fund, the last fund.
The last fund was done. They will not call the remaining capital.
Right. So there was 14% that was never called, right?
About 5 million out of 75.
Yeah, okay, I thought it was 14. So we paid fees on that throughout the whole process, and that was sort of the point that you're making, is that we're changing that fee structure so that we're only going to pay fees on what they call.
Invested capital.
Yeah, what they invest, yeah.
And I forgot to mention, for Fund 7, they actually already have two investments, and one of them is in Warner Creek. So that's arguably, in my opinion, arguably the best office asset in the whole county. I don't want to steal the thunder from them, but you know.
Even better than this?
Well, the ownership structure changed on this one.
We're going to look like across the street soon, aren't we?
So, of course, we don't invest in a fund based on one property, but it's just nice property to have in the portfolio.
Any other questions, or should we go ahead and bring them in?
All right. Come in. Losing our memberships.
Right.
It's almost all gone, too.
Well, actually, I drove through Sun Valley. Truth be told, but I looked over and everything. They only had a little.
Make up for the other times.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello.
Striking, like how bare it is.
Like something bomb there.
Yeah. Right.
First, let me say welcome. Thank you for coming to make your presentation. Do you have a confidentiality provision? And if so, we need your formal approval to waive it? You don't?
No.
Okay.
This is purely open, so.
Good, good. Let me ask that you introduce yourselves and then go forward on our meeting. The only admonition I'd make is that you're the last presentation before lunch.
So, so we can only hurt ourselves. Okay.
Are there any questions?
Yes. You know the fun. Well, thank you in return for letting us come and present Income and Growth Fund 7 to you. It's good to see you again. By way of introduction, my name is Matthew Wally. I'm actually based in Contra Costa, but I office out of San Francisco. My colleagues are from Chicago. I'm on the client service side. Jim Hutchinson and Joe Munoz are the key men in the fund. They have worked together on the Income Growth Fund series for many years. Hutch is the president and Joe is the investment officer. So we will be brief. If you turn to the first page of our presentation, page 2, this is a quick executive summary which my colleagues will expand upon. But LaSalle Income and Growth Fund 7 is the seventh fund in a series of U.S. value-added funds that started in 1996. And Hutch actually founded the series and has been present through every fund since then. So it's a continuation of a successful investment practice that's been in the four major property groups across the U.S. We have a strong and proven investment performance. Funds 5 and 6 are top-tier performers. And we believe they're top-tier performers because of the unique LaSalle advantages that we bring to the space. And those advantages are extensive operating experience, which means we actually work the property ourselves. We have better information because of our platform, which leads us to have better decision-making processes and hopefully better returns for our investors. And we focus a lot on the income side when we're looking for return. So what's the current status of Fund 7? We've had our first close at $300 million. We have a good line of sight to get to $500 million. And we believe by the final close, we will hit our target of $750 million. We've had 41% of the first closing commitments already invested in two properties, which we will discuss. And we have a robust acquisition pipeline, which was representative of about 2x of the current equity we have left remaining.
So with that, I thought I'd step back. You know, what do we do? You know, we buy properties that have something wrong with them, buildings, and we fix them. So typically they're either physical issues, they're old and tired, the prior owner hasn't kept them up, or they're leasing issues and sometimes they go hand in hand. So we buy them, we fix them. Our goal is to sell them to core investors at the end of the day who don't have the wherewithal to do what we do with the properties. It's really a hands-on, roll up your sleeves, fix the properties one by one. And as Matthew described, we typically do it ourselves. So 3 out of 4 deals for us are we do without a partner, where we have, where we need special local capabilities, ground up construction typically, we'll use a local partner. But by not using partners, we save double fees on those investments 3 out of 4 times. We cover the entire country, and we cover all 4 property types. So we'll go the place we think is the best risk-adjusted return at any point in time, and that changes over time. We think today is still a great time to invest. We are able, as Joe will describe, we've been able to buy at half of replacement cost in what we think are improving markets. The U.S. economy, while weak, is still generating jobs, which translates into a good real estate environment. So we think there's still an opportunity to buy broken real estate, fix it, and sell it to core investors, and there's plenty of core money there. Your return, you're in Income and Growth Fund 6. You made a $75 million investment in that fund. We've returned about 42% of that money. By spring, we will have returned more than your $75 million that you invested. So we're active. Completed most of the value add, and we're actively disposing of properties in what we think is a good market. To date, the return is almost 20%, so it's above our expectations. We've had great results, and the equity multiple to date is 1.5, but we think it'll go up a little as we you know, continue to collect rents and achieve our gains. To back up a little about us, we work, Joe and I work on a dedicated team, but we're part of LaSalle Investment Management, a global real estate company with $59 billion of assets under management globally. So we're a really big organization. And we are owned wholly by JLL, one of the largest real estate service providers globally. Two advantages, you know, one, the large organization gives us access to information wherever we need it. You'll see a JLL sign or a JLL truck in every major market you're in. We want to know what's going on in that market. We know who to call and how to get that information. So that's a big advantage. And two, we're all real estate people, so we share our knowledge to get more value out of the real estate and to make smarter decisions. On page six, we've shown pictures of some of our team, the senior members of our team. We've been together for a long time. We personally have most of our net worth tied up in these investments, so we invest directly in these funds just as you do. And the way we're paid is we're paid, if the performance is good, we get a share of the incentive fees at the end of the day. Very focused on income and growth, and all we do is income and growth within the organization. But again, we have the advantage of being part of a much larger organization. So LaSalle has a dedicated acquisition group that covers all markets all the time. Sometimes we're active in those markets, sometimes we aren't, but LaSalle can afford to maintain people in those markets all the time. So we can react to changes in local situations. We can react to things we find in one market and apply them in other markets, which we think is a big advantage. And then second, we can afford research and a dedicated research team that our fund in and of itself couldn't afford. So we have access to data and better information. We've got better ways to get access to the JLL information and other public information to make better decisions. And the result really on page seven is that we've been able to do an awful lot of our deals, either off-market or negotiated. Joe will talk about a couple of deals we're doing, but almost 80% of what we did in Fund 6 that you're invested in were deals where it wasn't an auction. We had the opportunity to work directly with an owner to buy the property that we wanted and negotiate a deal. And the result, as Matthew says, has been good performance.
And I get to talk about deals, the easy part in many ways. On page 8, we've got details on two seed assets in the Fund 7 portfolio. We've singled these out for two main reasons. Number one, if you were to make an investment in Fund 7, you would own your proportionate share of these assets, so it's worth spending time on them. And then second of all, we think these are great examples of how you get to value-add returns through increasing buildings in today's market. So on page 8, we very much like the downtown San Diego office market. It's characterized by very low vacancy, very low new supply, and really growing tenant demand. You've got tenants that are saying they don't need to be in expensive submarkets of the beaches to the north. You've got lots of people wanting to live in apartments downtown. So the employees are there, and the companies are starting to notice. So you've got great momentum downtown. We found a building that has been run as a commodity, high-quality office building. So learning some of the lessons we've done in different markets to create some excitement at the property level through capital expenditures, to attract tenants from different industries that are not in the building, we think is a great way to grow NOI on the property. I'd point out that this building is 91% leased, and we were able to buy it at approximately half of replacement cost, $275 a foot, so a very attractive basis right now. On page 9, this is really meant to answer the question, how do you get value-add returns when you buy a 90% occupied building? What is there left to do? And this is our framework in thinking through what are the building blocks to get to your mid-teens return. On the very left-hand side, at number one, you're buying at what we think is an attractive cap rate, 5.3% going in yield. And as I mentioned, this property, it's got 20% below market rents in place. We think that there's growing tenant demand that will want to be here if you can deliver a building that suits their corporate profile, helps them recruit people. When you can gather more people from different industries, you can stand out from the submarket crowd. Every other building in the submarket looks exactly the same. We want to get away from that. So that's the core of the strategy, 5.3%. Yes?
So you acquired this in March of 2016?
Correct.
How many, what percentage of the rents have you raised since buying it?
So you have, in the first 2 years, there's about 15% of the building that's rolling to market. So right now, we are about 93% occupied, so 2% of leases are today's rents. And then of the 15% that rolls in the first couple of years, we've gotten to about a third of that. So maybe 5% of, 5 to 6% of total occupancy, we've been able to mark to today's market.
Okay, next question. When you have raised rents, what percentage of those people have decided to leave?
We've had very good tenant retention, in fact, because when you've got a submarket that has such low vacancy and no new supply, there's very limited choices. So one of the benefits of this office property is that since many leases were signed in 2012, 2013, 2014, even if you're raising the market rents to today's market, it's really their best option. So they're moving from a much lower rent to a current rent today, but they're able to pay the freight. It's not cost prohibitive where they're moving.
So you haven't lost anybody or have?
Lost anybody. Not since March.
Not since March.
We would expect to. We would expect to as we roll through and you continue to price point. It's not a reasonable expectation to keep everybody. But since March, we haven't lost any of our existing tenants.
I won't get too deep in the weeds on this, but this is almost a 50-year-old building. So you have a little comment there that says renovated. Is that, you could look at that a couple of different ways. TIs are TIs, you know.
Yep.
Okay, so what? But you got mechanical systems in there, the elevators and HVAC and roof and all that kind of stuff. To what extent have those exceeded their useful life?
Almost all of them have been touched. So the prior owner was a high-quality core owner. They spent a lot of money to keep the systems up to date. They haven't done wholesale replacement for a couple of them. The elevators, for example, went through modernization. The interior cabs are modernized, but some of the original elevator equipment is still there. So in our underwriting, we would assume that you either have to do it during our hold period, or the next guy that we sell it to will dock us for the full price of the elevator modernization.
Because there's some real money in that stuff when mechanicals start getting past their useful life.
Yeah, no question. No question. Okay. Some of the upgrades they've done were to make it into your typical average office lobby, for example, that is what people expected in 2011 and 2012. But there's been nothing to suggest if you are a creative tenant or a tenant moving from the market why this particular building would stand out to you in downtown. And that's where our business plan comes.
And a building that old, any asbestos in there?
There is some asbestos in the elevator shafts, but they're in places that can be mitigated without disruption to the operations.
That can be a huge deal.
That can be a huge deal. Yeah. You have to carefully consider that, and the underwriting assumes that we've tested different scenarios for disruption and cost all the way through.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. So that's number two, to grow NOI growth. Number three is to show you that our underwriting for conservatism always assumes that pricing metrics when we go to sell are softer than today. So we're saying on a cap rate basis, 75 basis points higher on the exit than today. So appreciation is dependent on growing NOI. It's not dependent on pricing metrics getting more attractive in the future. Number four, this is a leverage strategy. So we've employed 60% loan cost debt on this. The benefit of having a very well occupied property generating a lot of cash flows, you can get a really attractive loan. So you can buy at a 5.3% cap rate. Our cost of debt on this asset is LIBOR plus 180, which is about 2.3% today. And that generates 5.5% return in our underwriting. So you put that all together, you've got your mid-teens levered return, a 13.7% return all the way on the right. That's how we believe is a great approach to generating value add in today's market. I'd also point out that there's no fee drag to a local operating partner, which on a deal like this could be as much as 2 to 3% of your return, because this is a strategy that our team has done many times over in-house. We do it directly. The second asset on page 10 is much closer to home for everybody here. This is in Walnut Creek, so it's right next to the 680, directly across the street from the Walnut Creek Park. This was a deal that was a negotiated transaction with a group that we've known for many years. They were under severe pressure to sell. We were able to negotiate a deal with them. It's three distinct office buildings that have been very well maintained. They've had the capital to keep them in good condition, but they really haven't had the capital to do leasing. So they've been doing a lot of free rent deals, no TI deals, just barely getting by. So rents have not been pushed at the property. Strategically speaking, we think they made a misstep in running each of these buildings separately. There's a nice green campus in the middle, if you know Ignacio Center. And none of the properties in the submarket have this green space. So we look around, we see things that we've done in downtown San Jose and Silicon Valley, and say, let's use a little bit of that in Walnut Creek to stand out from the crowd. So there's a little annex building in the middle of this property that we're going to make the hub. It's going to be the amenity center. It'll have a large conference rooms, small conference rooms for tenants. There's a bakery called the Sweet Affair, who's our restaurant tenant here. We're going to make that in the center point of the amenity center. So we're going to take some cues and upgrade the amenities like we've done in Silicon Valley and other places and really try to make this property stand out from the crowd. Again, it's 86% leased. It's got an almost 10% leveraged income return right off the bat. We won't walk through the full analysis of the return. It's substantially similar to the San Diego. This one, Jerry, I would expect you might lose more tenants as we roll through because there's one building that is probably the lowest, the most affordable alternative in downtown Walnut Creek. And I think there's a lot of tenants there that if you push them on price, they'll move to other submarkets. So I would expect here you'd probably get a little bit more turnover.
So parking and buildings?
Yeah, so there's two parking garages. There's a central parking structure in the middle of all three buildings, and there's a subterranean garage structure on the building on the north side that's at Main and Pringle. So there's it's abundant parking. That one of the key things, at least for us on this deal, is if you're leaving that part of Walnut Creek BART to get on the highways, if you're in the stuff across the street, Mount Diablo Plaza and others, it can take you 15 minutes to get out of those parking garages and onto the highways. This is a great spot for access because there's so many ways you can get out of there. We know that a lot of the tenant brokers, when they give up tours at those other properties, they'll park their car at this property because they don't want to get hung up in the other ones and be embarrassed on a tenant tour.
It's across the street from BART.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, location's good.
As you know, there's a very ambitious plan for residential and retail across the street and all throughout Walnut Creek. And you look at out your window here, there's no office space going up. It's all being converted to residential and retail.
Yeah. Joe, can you comment briefly on your vision? Because you've been to the property many times, you observe the morning crowd, afternoon crowd in and out of car station with nothing else in the area.
Yeah.
Can you comment on that?
Yeah, you know, when we say things like hands-on, we talk about, you know, we're guys from Chicago, we'll stand at 8 o'clock in the morning watching people for 2 hours, watching people get off BART, watching their path out of the parking garage. You know, the traveling across those streets, they're pretty wide streets and people are going pretty darn fast there. So we're trying to find a way to get some connection that this will be the commuter stop off of BART before you filter into downtown Walnut Creek and other places. We're trying to make sure that people's normal path of travel as they drive into the property, the amenity location is a logical place. It's not like they come in through the garage and the amenity is all the way over here. So we really envision a place that will blend a casual meeting place for tenants at the office property. And potentially, if we really do it right, we'll draw some outside traffic from people on the way in from home or on the way back from work.
If you really want to draw some attention, you know, while you're stalking people at 7 in the morning, wear a hoodie.
And carry a black bag.
Yeah, right? I think they'll be over to see you.
So those are the TC'd assets in Fund 7. On page 11, just to remind you of our expertise in different property types, we've included several local transactions. I would say local in the Bay Area. So we renovated an office building in downtown San Jose in the fund that you were in Fund 6. We owned Bay Street Emeryville, which is the large retail property next to the IKEA in Emeryville for many years. We owned that for about 6 years. And then we did build 700,000 square feet of industrial on the Fremont-Milpitas border, which we leased most of that to Apple, and that was also in the fund you're investing in. So across property types, even just a snapshot here in the Bay Area gives you a good sense of what we do.
Well,
of these are sold?
These are all sold, fully realized. So everything you see here are fully realized. And then just one last comment on pipeline on fund 12, on page 12. We've got the two existing assets office assets in California on the left-hand side. This is just high probability pipeline, but this gives you a sense of the different property sectors that we're working on things, as well as the other geographies across the U.S. So certainly more activity immediately for this fund in the Midwest and East Coast markets is a nice complement to the assets.
What's your expectation for how long it will take you to completely deploy all of the capital?
On this one, we think it'll take us the better part of the three-year investment period. You know, in the last fund, Deborah, we saw so many great opportunities, especially in the development sector, that we, of the three-year investment period, we were done in closer to two. But we think that this office strategy has a lot of legs. We're being a little bit more patient in the apartment sector because we see pricing on some of the renovation plays to be fairly rich, so we want to be patient with that. That's why I say I think it'll take most of the three-year allotted period.
Can I drill
relatively slower versus the last
drill one. Down a little bit on your question? Okay. Is that what you would define as the commitment period? 3 years?
Oh, that's the investment,
period. Investment period.
Right.
So commitment
so define
is between
the estimated commitment period.
Well, the commitment period is the period between the first closing and the final closing.
Right.
The final closing must happen by March 31st of next year.
Of next year.
Yeah.
So the 1.5% on committed fees would expire next March.
No, the way the
transition.
So the way the fees work, the fees you pay no fee until we invest the money.
Right. There's no commitment fees
There's
on
no
this.
No commitment
fees.
We changed the
fees. Yeah, we changed.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
we changed
right.
it so that you wouldn't have the J curve.
So we, yeah, so we eliminated so that you don't have a negative return based on fees. We eliminated those fees.
Yeah.
So, and I believe Chi-Chi, in your memo to us, there was an indication that only $71 million was actually invested of the last $75 million commitment we made. Was there a reason why you didn't call the last $4 million?
It's difficult to get precisely okay. to the full investment. I would, you know, if, as an investor, and I would say as an investor, you should expect sort of 95% invested, and that's typically where we've ended up, sometimes a little more, a little less.
Okay.
But it's really hard to get to precisely $75 million.
We'll make a reserve for each property for what we think the capital plan will take. In some cases, it takes a little bit less, but we set aside that money to execute that plan if it costs more. So
okay.
It wasn't that there was not another deal. It's that we thought it was going to be more expensive in some places.
And so if you hit a downturn in the market, we make sure there's enough capital to do everything we need to do, even if everything stops in place and you're relying on that.
Okay. Okay. If there are no other questions, I'd just like to conclude.
Okay. Go ahead.
Before you go for lunch. So
we'll get out of your way.
Yeah, exactly. So just to reiterate, this is the seventh fund. Gentlemen have been doing it for a long time and successfully. We've improved the terms for Fund 7. There is, in fact, a discount of 15% if you're a $75 million investor or higher. We do expect to reach our $750 million target size. We have had strong performance, and as Hutch and Joe have outlined, they think that the markets still remain good, and we expect to hit our fund returns for Fund 7 as well. And again, we do that through the LaSalle advantages of extensive operating experience, better information, and a focus on income. And finally, last but not least, I just want to reiterate what an important investor you are for us. We value the relationship, and we hope that we can continue the relationship in Fund 7.
Matthew, would you quickly describe the 15% discount? What discount against what or what?
It's on the it's a 15% discount on the invested equity fee.
So the fee. The full fee for somebody who invests, say, $50 million would be 1.35%. Yours will be
1.15%.
Okay, thank you.
I probably missed this, and you probably said it, but how much have you raised for this fund of the 750?
Yeah, to date, we've raised $300 million, and we have a really good line of sight. We're working with LPs to get to 500, and the final close, we think we'll reach the 750 target.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, thank you very much for coming in and making your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your time.
Exarvart.com makes contact.
Thank you, Joe. Yeah.
Get on your knees.